Welcome to First State Insights, a podcast presented by the University of Delaware's Institute for Public Administration. We call ourselves IPA for short. We are located in the Biden School of Public Policy and Administration. My name is Sean O'Neill, and I'm a staff member here at the Institute. I'm happy to be your host for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. On today's episode, I'll be talking with Doug Motley, Managing Principal at Jack Lingo Asset Management and the Vice Chair of the Delaware State Council on Housing, which is a governor-appointed board that advises the Delaware State Housing Authority. The conversation was recorded on September 19th, 2023. We discussed Doug's background and experience working in real estate in Delaware, particularly in the housing industry in Sussex County, and how the housing market, Sussex County, the state of Delaware, and the real estate industry has changed over time. I hope you enjoy the episode. I'm happy to be joined here by Doug Motley, principal at Jack Lingo Asset Management. Thanks for joining me today, Doug.
Great to see you, Sean.
So wanted to just start with, if you could tell us a little bit about your company, Jack Lingo Asset Management. I think a lot of us have seen your name. Maybe people don't know exactly what you do. And then, you know, if you'd add your history of working in the housing industry in Delaware.
Sure. I'll start with a little bit of my personal backstory, and that kind of leads into the JLAM story a bit. So I'm a Delaware native, grew up in Dover, Delaware, went to University of Delaware, proud Blue Hen, and grew up in a family of educators, actually. So my mom, my grandmother, my sister, all educators, and my dad was a small business owner. So grew up with education and teaching kind of as a key tenet of things that we talked about at the dinner table. So went to University of Delaware. After college, moved to Wilmington. So worked my way north up the state and was in banking with MBNA. Many people in Delaware are probably very familiar with that name still. So that was a wonderful experience and was there for 5 or 6 years, I guess, after college. And when Bank of America and the MBNA merger happened was when an opportunity opened up for me to actually jump into a new career in real estate. And that was when I moved down to the beach here in Rehoboth. So that was in 2006 and moved into finance role at a regional development company that was mostly in housing development and construction. And so that was kind of my first foray into housing in Delaware, but had been up and down the state, you know, my whole life and career up to that point. So 2006, 2007, 2008 was with that development company, obviously a challenging time in the housing industry leading into the GFC. And in 2008, left and started the first of several companies that ended up founding and some selling, some still being a part of. But that kind of translated into 2011, where one of my partners, Nick Hammonds, and I, who'd worked together dating back to MBNA, formed Jack Lingo Asset Management in partnership with the Lingo family. And really the impetus to that was we were very like-minded in how we thought about real estate development, real estate investment, and that there was an opportunity to provide investment opportunities to individuals that may otherwise not have access to them. So kind of bringing some of the curated and selected real estate investment opportunities that we had been putting together and building an investment business or a platform around that. And so since 2011, fast forward to now, we have developed a dozen or so communities on the for sale side, residential, as well as for rent residential, including both traditional apartment complexes, as well as we have several build for rent communities in the pipeline as well. We also do commercial investment and some other development activities, but as it relates to housing, you know, we've developed more than 2,500 units in central and southern Delaware over the last decade. So pretty big player, I think, in the overall, you know, housing market for the last, you know, 10 plus years.
How have you seen the housing market change over time?
Sure. So dating back to 30, 40 years ago, you know, down in Sussex County, it was a far cry from what it is now. You know, I think some of the infrastructure improvements, specifically sewer, expanded the ability to develop beyond kind of just Route 1. I believe that happened in the 90s, and that really was the catalyst to a lot of the first wave of kind of development leading into the early mid-2000s. What we saw, you know, in that was a lot more second home buying, a lot more speculative buying. That was largely fueled by the type of mortgage products that were available at the time. That changed quickly through the GFC. And then, you know, you saw a recovery kind of starting in 2011 for the past 10 plus years, particularly kind of after the first shock of COVID, but shortly thereafter, really throwing fuel in the fire to the growth. And so what I'd characterize the kind of residential development and sales activity over the last 10 years generally as being much more stable, predictable, fundamentally sound, where the underlying mortgages and borrowers are much more appropriately sized given for the home that they're buying. Not a lot, much less risk of speculation or significant swings in the market. And, you know, there's just a lot of people that I think find Delaware, particularly Southern Delaware, a great place to live, a great place to be. And so that's drawing in, you know, migration of people leaving higher tax states around us, higher cost of living states, and lower quality of living places, and really moving to Delaware, and specifically, again, you know, the southeast portion of the state. And so we continue to see strength and people moving here and people wanting to be here for the long term.
Okay, great. Thank you. You had mentioned previously that you were on the current chair of the Governor's Council on Housing in Delaware. Can you describe what that group is like a bit? How many members you have, how often you meet, and most importantly, you know, what have you been focusing on lately in terms of topics of discussion?
Sure. So the Council on Housing is a board of 11 members. I think currently we're at 8 or 9 and replacing a couple who've recently moved on. But the role is really to advise the governor, the housing director, and the General Assembly on housing policy and priorities, and also review and advise the Delaware State Housing Authority on their programs that they have going or that they're considering. And so I've been fortunate enough to be a part of that group over the past, I think, 6 or 7 years, and this is my second year of chairing the organization. We meet once a month, and it's an open forum, public's invited, and typically the group has representatives from each county in the state, multiple political parties, and a variety of different backgrounds. And so what we're able to do is have topics that come up that are timely as it relates to housing and have a discussion around them, talk about what different perspectives there are maybe from the private and public sector, and then, you know, have a conversation and a dialogue with the team from the State Housing Authority. How do we help them achieve their goals as it relates to their interaction with legislature and or other elected officials?
Is there anything specific that's been coming up around housing that's been a focus?
Yeah, so it's been a really dynamic time over the past couple of years, particularly with COVID and then the following federal and state stimulus funds that became available. So the State Housing Authority has done an unbelievable job in standing up a number of new programs during a really challenging time when people were just trying to figure out how to have stability in their life, let alone have a crazy requiring work environment. But it's really impressive, the number of programs surrounding rental assistance, mortgage assistance, providing some of the rapid rehousing type activities for the emergency type situations that have come up. So part of what we talk about is prioritization. There's a ton of different needs and different populations that are in need of some type of housing assistance, whether that be more on the permanent side or more on the emergency side. And there's only a finite amount of dollars. And so talking about how those dollars get prioritized and how do you impact the widest amount of people in the most favorable way. Nobody has the holy grail for sure, but those conversations I think are useful for the people who are in the trenches every day designing those programs and implementing those programs.
And in terms of housing affordability, what are some of the conversations I guess you're hearing maybe in the development construction community in terms of, you know, what might be helpful to provide, you know, more units or more affordable units? You had mentioned built to rent, and maybe explain what that's all about.
I think from our perspective or from my perspective, a lot of the issue is on the supply side. And what I mean by that is, A, we have a shortage of housing units, period. That's both a national thing, numbers somewhere 4 to 7 million, million homes, depending on which source you look at. And in Delaware, I think it's in the neighborhood of 18 to 20,000 homes from a shortage standpoint. So we need more product, more supply, whether that's people that are in a lower income level that need some subsidy to afford it, or just, you know, everyday workers that are in the workforce that just need a place to live. Providing solutions that deliver more absolute number of units is important. The second piece to that is there's a lot of homogeneity across the product type that's actually out there. And the number of single family homes is staggering relative to other product types. So I think our land use codes across the state, which is obviously a local topic or local jurisdiction, but land use codes are not overly flexible in allowing for different types of housing types, whether that be cottages or, you know, accessory dwelling units above a detached garage or townhomes or just more dense type units. There's not a lot of flexibility for a developer to go after. In most cases, it requires either a conditional use or a change of zone, which from a developer perspective can be a risky proposition, particularly as certain anti-development groups influence the elected officials more. So you've got, you know, local elected officials, which are facing, you know, a vocal opposition to higher density solutions that may address the affordable solution. So, or the affordable problem. So I totally understand the position that the elected officials are in, but if there was a way to provide them some cover, like, you know, there needs to be some amount of affordable or just different type of housing product put out there that could provide some possible cover to not make them feel like they're going to get voted out of office if they, you know, are in favor of certain high density land use applications. As it relates to the build for rent side of things, what that is basically building a dedicated community, typically of townhomes or single family homes, where the whole community kind of is oriented like a traditional for sale community, but is operated like an apartment project. And so what that means is, you know, the units or homes are rented on an annual basis, just like an apartment, but the person is renting a lot with a house on it and has a yard, has their own garage. So it's a different living experience. And I think that we believe that that attracts a different renter or different consumer than a traditional apartment project. Somebody who may have a pet and wants to have a fenced in backyard, somebody who may just want not to have somebody living above them or and below them. And that's across the age cohort of younger folks that may be, you know, moving out into their first new home, starting a family, or could be an older baby boomer type person who is looking for more flexibility to travel or just no maintenance, no HOA fees. So we think it's a really interesting opportunity to provide a different type of housing from a consumer experiential standpoint than what's commonly found in Delaware, at least. Pretty prevalent in the Southeast and Southwest, but it's a very capital intensive endeavor to build 200 townhomes. So there's limited competitive set currently.
You mentioned the lack of flexibility in zoning, and you said before most of the product you build is single family or single family detached homes. Can you describe any sort of variety? Have you attempted to build different types of homes over the years, and kind of how is that different or difficult?
Yeah, sure. Great question. So, you know, start with your traditional single family detached home on a quarter acre lot or a third of an acre lot. The next kind of progression, it would be a traditional townhome, which might be six or eight townhomes in a string. And then kind of getting more creative from that, you could have cottages, which would be higher density, but might be one, two bedroom cottages, you know, four walls, dedicated their own yard, that kind of thing. And then obviously the further dense you have would be more of your traditional apartments, or there's some product called a horizontal apartment where it's basically, you know, six or eight units that might be one or two bedrooms, but they're all connected. And so there's a lot of variety of those things. You know, we've done the single family, we've done the townhomes, we have done the traditional garden style kind of three-story walk-up apartments. And so, you know, one of the things that we have in the approval queue now is a cottage style project, but it's slow to get through the entitlement process because it's something people haven't really seen around here before. And so the jurisdictional bodies deciding on this, the first one made a recommendation unanimously in favor of it, which was great. But then the actual deciding body is kind of taking a little bit of time to get through that process. So hopefully that will be approved, because I think it's a really unique and accretive to the community type development that we're really excited about the opportunity to build, but we just need to be kind of unleashed to be able to do it.
Thanks. That's helpful. So, you know, I think as most people in Delaware know, there's been, and you mentioned before, there's been a tremendous amount of growth, especially in Sussex County over the last 10 to 15 years. Can you explain, in addition to what you were just talking about, can you explain what you see for the future of Sussex County and for the state in terms of growth and development?
Sure. So a big topic is obviously infrastructure, and particularly roads. That's in Sussex County and Eastern Sussex County, but I think up and down the state, you know, anybody who has gone across the Route 195 interchange that's been under construction for 15 years, you know, kind of can identify that with that. But I think DelDOT and Sussex County have worked hard over the past 5 years or so to put together a transportation improvement district for the most likely to be intensive development coming for Sussex County. And I think that's in its early stages of being implemented. It's in place, but there haven't been a lot of projects that have kind of come through yet. So I think the road infrastructure is important, but also thinking through how land use ties into that. So, you know, again, specific to Eastern Sussex County, all of your commercial is virtually on Route 1 or in Lewis or Rehoboth. Well, any points west are going to have to come to Route 1 to get to that. So if you don't start seeking to provide some commercial outlets that are on the east-west corridors of Route 16, Route 9, Route 24, Route 26, Route 54, as you work your way south, then you could really relieve a lot of that pressure if you had some destination type commercial further to the west outside of Route 1. So I think there's some land use coupled with infrastructure investments that can really work hand in hand if they're well thought out. But again, you run into the opposition efforts of changing land use there. I think another piece is really something you mentioned earlier is on the economic development side. And that is how do and this goes to affordable housing as well, is how do we impact what people can afford, meaning the income side of the population. And I think there's a lot to be done in terms of aligning the skill set with what jobs are available and helping people be professionally educated to the right skill for the best paying jobs that are available. And then also, how do we attract and retain the best companies that fit? How do we attract and retain the best companies and compete with the neighboring states that are trying to fight for those same companies that are growing to come to the state, A, set up shop here, and B, keep them here to grow? I think there's a lot to be done on that front. So it's a multifaceted problem, but I think there's a lot of levers that can be pulled to try and attack it.
Great. Well, that's all I have today. I wanted to thank you again for your time, Doug, and we'll look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Great. Thanks. Good to chat with you and appreciate the opportunity.
You too. Thanks a lot. For more information about Jack Lingo Asset Management or the Delaware Council on Housing, please visit their websites listed in our show notes. To learn more about IPA, you can visit us at ipa.udel.edu. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Please subscribe so that you'll never miss an episode.